I'm Kurt Benkert, and this is Pocket Presence, powered by Sleeper. Pocket Presence gang, we are back and better than ever. We have some exciting news. Football's back. Hard Knocks is back. Preseason football is rolling. The Bears got stormed out, rained out, whatever you want to call it, thunderstormed out at the Hall of Fame game. It was actually a really good game. It was some people saying the ghost of Andre Johnson's past came out. Monster game by the receiver, number 80. I think it was Colin Johnson. But yeah, Tyler, we got ball coming up. We're almost there. I'm excited to get into this. I think there's going to be a lot of really big implications that happen over the next 2 weeks with some potential trades, some other things that are going down in position battles, and I'm excited to get into it.
Yeah, you talked about it. This will be our last episode without football really having happened. You can count the Hall of Fame game, but starting this week, we have football, and we have football to talk about, and I'm excited to talk about it with you. You mentioned the trade thing. The big story right now is Brandon Ayuk and people just not being sure where he's going to go. We talked about it last week and the effects it might have in the 49ers locker room. If you hear Kyle Shanahan, Christian McCaffrey talk about it, they talk about him as if he is off the team, although he's not technically off the team.
Yeah.
Floated the Browns, the Commanders, the Patriots, the Steelers, all his potential landing spots. As of this morning, I saw like the Steelers were probably the best fit. What have you seen? Where are you most excited for him to potentially land?
Dude, I hope he goes to Pittsburgh. I hope that he fits in well with that team, with the swag that team has. This makes me a little bit nervous about the 49ers. They're thin in the receiver room. You know, having some discourse around training camp and this and that is not necessarily a good thing, especially for the start of the year. Like, you always want to start fast. And the 49ers have not been a traditional start fast team. That's not really their thing. However, the other thing that's a part of this is whoever they trade for, the longer that this takes, the longer it takes for that new guy to get in to the equation, whether it be a receiver, whatever, right? Like, whatever they're going to be getting for Brandon Ayuk when they do trade, it's just taking more time and you're getting less reps with Brock Purdy. They're already thin in the receiver room with some training camp injuries that aren't going to be long-term, but this time of the year matters so heavily. And I think that if the 49ers start slow this year, chalk it up to all of this, and you heard it here first.
Let's say that he does end up with the Steelers.
Mm-hmm.
How excited are you for that opportunity for Justin Fields or Russell Wilson? We could also talk about which quarterback is going to be the guy taking majority of the snaps for the Steelers. But what does the Steelers offense look like with the addition of Brandon Ayuk?
Dude, it's kind of nasty. Like, right? Like, it's kind of, they need one more guy. It cannot be Pickens the entire time. He cannot be dunking on people, back shoulder fades. Like, pull a little coverage away from Pickens because you need a few more dogs there, and Ayuk would be a huge get.
We also had a couple fights, some training camp fights. You get my sense from Hard Knocks, my favorite takeaway from Hard Knocks has been you get so tired of hitting the same people in training camp that when you get the opportunity to play in preseason games or frequently now do these, you know, collaboration training camp type events, that the tensions flare because you're finally hitting somebody that's not on your own team. With the Giants and Lions each fined $200,000 for their training camp fights, which seems like a weird thing that the NFL is now getting involved with. I mean, leave it to the NFL to levy
to get involved
unnecessary fines. But what are these joint practices like? Is it just like, do you see these fights as something more? You know, you have like DK Metcalf swinging, you have Malik Nabers just taking a drive-by shot. Is it more than just these guys are finally now getting a chance to play other people, or are you concerned about a Malik Nabers, DK Metcalf, fill in the blank?
No, I'm not concerned about the guys. Look, dude, training camp is long and grueling, and the days are long. The guys are exhausted, and now you get to deal with other people that are also exhausted and also don't necessarily like you, right? Like, if you have a team on team fight that's like within your own team, it's a little different. You guys, like, you're seeing each other all the time. Something spilled over from an individual period that went into a team and a cheap shot, whatever. But like, when you're playing two different teams in practice, you have no remorse for anybody. Like, F those dudes, right? Like, they're here. Like, we're here to go make plays. And you don't know what led up to it. You don't know like what tugging of the jerseys or little, like, you know, there used to be a game that the Packers D-line would play, is that they would steal your towel. So they would steal the towel of the QB or the running back and throw it. So they have to go run and get it. Like, you know what I mean? Just stuff like that adds up. And I mean, a $200,000 fine, like, we're talking about what? It's $400,000 in fines for a fight in practice. Like, what are we doing? Why are we, is this just add it to the community pot, and if someone lands on free parking, they get to cash out. Like, where's this money going? There's some, like, let's get a paper trail on that money.
So I think the NFL will tell you that the money goes to charity. It's a little, I mean, you'd like as a player, I'm sure, to be able to write that off and count that against your earnings. You're making a charitable donation. I also find that it's not irony, but the unfortunate part of some of those fines, and I'm not sure if those fines are assessed to the team, that they're assessed to the players that were involved.
They can't be to the players. No way.
I mean, $200,000, if you're talking about half the guys there are probably not going to make $200,000 this year playing football. That's a little ridiculous.
Yep. That's a post-tax $200,000 too. I'd assume so. For some of these guys, but the guys, there's no way the guys are getting fined. That's definitely got to be a team fine. It's coming off the books.
Is the goal of these joint practices different than what a preseason game might be? The more I hear people talk about the potential of an 18-game NFL season, it seems like we're just going to go in the direction of these joint practices. We'll have less preseason games. That way teams get to pick and choose how they want to compete in the preseason. But what are those actually like?
Dude, the joint practices are nice because you get all of the things that you get with a preseason game where you don't really know the personnel. You got to scheme a little bit. You got to understand different rules if they're three down or four down up front. But you get to see different matchups. You get to see how guys practice as receivers, as DNs against guys they don't see every day. So you're always going to have somewhat of an understanding of the guy across from you if you see him every single day. When you have a new guy that you haven't seen or haven't game planned for, haven't scouted, you got to make different moves. Maybe he's got longer arms, so you got to not let him jam you off the line a little bit more. You know what I mean? Like, it creates more reactionary things that happen at the line of scrimmage, happen at the snap of the ball, that I think coaches want to see that without the risk of getting tackled, going to the ground, getting hurt in preseason, flying around and all that stuff.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I want to ask you about a guy that you've been high on since he was drafted, which drew a bit of criticism because I don't think a lot of people agreed with the Falcons taking Michael Penix as high as they did, but he's been playing well in camp. You called out a couple nice throws that he's made. Yeah. What does this preseason, first season look like for Michael Penix, especially in the context of sitting behind a veteran like Kirk Cousins?
Yeah, man, I think what they're looking for him is just get comfortable, understand the system. Don't be a superhero. Just understand how to do all the things pre-snap and at the snap, like a point guard, as if you're playing basketball, right? Like, just know where the ball needs to go, know how it needs to get there and the timing it needs to get there and what type of throws you need. And that one clip of him throwing that timing out route, everyone's like, oh, it's like routes on air, whatever. Like, no, dude. He changed the protection, moved his running back up in two jet to cover the A gap because they were a nickel double mug. He didn't forget to pull his motion down on him, assuming what it was, a short crosser. Then he realized he got blitzed and he threw the out route at his hot. Like, that's all the stuff that happens in just a fraction of a second that he has to understand or like remember. Again, the process of playing quarterback in the NFL, that's one play, right? Like, that is one instance, one play that he nailed, and now he's got to do it again. And in the course of a game, he's got to do it 55, 60, 70 times. So those types of things show you where he is as a rookie is really good, because that's like next level in a way. A lot of teams don't ask quarterbacks, or I'll put it this way. There's some teams that don't ask quarterbacks to do all of that. And the fact that they're asking Michael Penix Jr. to do that, and he's doing it well in practice this early, that's a really good sign for them. That means if Kirk Cousins goes down this year, you can trust him more than you would a traditional rookie. If Kirk Cousins plays subpar, maybe you can trust the more talented guy that's younger to play next year, and maybe you make an offseason move to a team that needs a quarterback even more, right? Like, there's a lot of implications of that, but what that was for me, that was a checked box. All right, so you have to think of what goes into playing quarterback. Michael Penix Jr. has to hear the play call in his headset. Then he has to remember what is said and spit it back out to the huddle in a cadence that, like, maybe the coach is saying differently. Maybe the coach is like, why fly to trips right, three jet, stick, Patriot, right? Or three jet, X-Dragon, Patriot. So if it's said really fast, then he's going to have to slow it down and say it slower to the huddle and make sure he's talking to each person to know their responsibilities. Then he has to say the snap count. Ready, break. They go to the line of scrimmage. He has to see the defense. He has to remember the motion. He has to know which coverage tells him where to go with the ball. And then he has to remember the snap count. And then he has to read it out and then make an accurate throw. You know what I mean? Like, that is the process of playing quarterback in the NFL, every single pass play, every single play. And so some guys just can't do that this early. So the fact that he can do that early in a practice setting that looks somewhat scrimmagey, that's a really good sign.
How much do you think it benefits him to have Kirk Cousins there? Because that's the other aspect of this, where he looks great, but the reason nobody's talking about it is because there is no expectation that he's going to go out there and play week one. So what does that mean for him? One, that there's no expectation on him, but two, what role do you think Kirk Cousins plays in helping him understand all of that stuff that you just said?
Yeah. You know, I think one of the coolest parts of about this offseason for the Falcons is that Kirk Cousins is going somewhere new in a system that is familiar, but there's nuances to it that are new. So Kirk Cousins is learning a new system for the first time in this offense along the same time that a rookie is learning it. So this is not a situation where Michael Penix Jr. is going in and Kirk Cousins can't necessarily be bothered with all the rookie questions, because Kirk Cousins is going to have those questions answered for himself because it's a new offense for him. So this is not a like, hey, the rookie's here, he's got to play catch up. Like, they are both learning the offense at somewhat the same time. Kirk's just had experience, obviously, learning the same scheme of offense around the league. So there'll be different route tags, different things they call different formations. But I actually think that plays into Penix Jr.'s development to be able to have a vet that is going through it in this offense with this team for the first time with new personnel. Like, Kirk Cousins is trying to figure out how does Drake London run routes, just like Michael Penix Jr. is. Same with Pitts, same with Bijan, like the body language, how they run it. So I can guarantee you that that room is a lot more collaborative than some of the other rooms with a really long-standing vet and a young rookie.
It's really interesting. Do you think, I haven't heard anything about Kurt playing in the preseason. Do you think there's a benefit to him playing in a new season? Okay, he's not. How do you feel about
Kirk
that?
Cousins I guess not playing in preseason. I know that they're playing the long game here and hoping that he can just knock off the rust, right? But let's be honest, the last time he touched a ball in a live situation, his Achilles popped. And now you're going to give Michael Penix Jr. 3 games to, again, get developed, get understanding, get the live reps. I really wish that Kirk Cousins was playing in a preseason game, at least a few snaps. Like, that's hard to do, no matter who you are, especially in a new system with new guys that are running routes. So I think, are they doing joint practices? Are the Falcons doing joint practices? If they are, that's probably where you can get the best bang for your buck if you're Kirk Cousins.
How do you feel about this idea generally of, one, how many preseason games there are, two, how this new wave of teams just not playing their starters? Like, Rodgers, probably not going to play in this preseason.
Yeah,
Kirk probably not going to play in the preseason. And suppose other guys that were injured, but we saw this trend before. We were talking about 37-year-old quarterbacks that pop their Achilles.
Yeah. To be honest, like I think that the NFL in the next 5 to 10 years will completely change how they do preseason. I think there might be one preseason game by the time it's all said and done. That will be heavy for the young guys. I think they will aim to do more joint practices that are open to the public that are not live. That would be the best case of how to do this. Think of everything you want to know out of preseason games. You want to get different looks, different guys, whatever. You can do all of that in practice, minus the tackling. Tackling is a hard thing. You don't know if a guy can tackle until he's put in that situation. Leave that for a preseason game. And I know these guys will get less ops in a preseason game, but you'll get way more meaningful practice if you're practicing with multiple joint practices. And this all kind of, in my opinion, plays into this longer training camp ramp up that might happen in a few years where there's no OTAs. Start in July, a little bit earlier in July, let the ramp up happen for 3 to 4 weeks, then hit training camp late July, early August, hit a few, you know, joint practices, have one preseason game, get into the regular season. That, in my opinion, makes the most people happy. But save that for a rainy day.
I did see, and I think it was a year ago, you talked about how every practice, or was it every training camp, something should be filmed because you thought it would benefit these guys that were at risk of not making a roster. Do you think that there would be some negative secondary effect of not having preseason games on? I guess I'm assuming that those really matter. Like, that's a guy who's on the borderline of making a team. That's an opportunity to get good film out there and to maybe make another team. But is that not how coaches think about it, or is it is?
I think that these practices that are joint should be shared around the league, to be honest. Like, if one team's getting access to it, I think all teams should get access to it. And again, coaches are already hiding their shit, right? Like, they don't show anything in preseason. So the guys that pop off in preseason, there's a handful that definitely earn spots that way. But if teams around the league were able to see what other guys do in practice, it would save everyone a lot of time in the cut phase. Like, hey, we all know that this dude's a dog. He deserves to be on the 53. Or, hey, this guy, maybe he doesn't deserve to be anywhere, right? Like, it's going to go both ways. But I just think joint practices replacing preseason games for the most part and allowing those to be filmed and shared as league property in the film department, I think would fix a lot of problems. And logistically, how amazing would that be? That would make so much more sense than having to fly 10 guys out, try them out, make them run routes. Like, at least you get to see in camp what this guy was doing and have a relative idea of what he was being asked to do. That's just my opinion.
I find it really hard to think that the NFL is going to give up what are essentially four extra games. You know, they're preseason games and tickets don't go for as much, but a beer costs the same, parking costs the same. I guess where they make the most amount of money on TV, those rights aren't as valuable. And they're often just broadcast locally, but it's going to be,
give each team their own Hard Knocks, scale that operation. Give us a look into what joint practices and training camp look like and make your money there. That's my opinion. But I'm not a part of the NFL like that. I don't run the operation.
You're not a part of the NFL like that. All we can do is give them recommendations and hope that they're listening. Because some good ideas coming out here. One last point about training camp before we talk some fantasy, because drafts are happening. They're coming up. The Chiefs this year, whereas last year we felt like we were talking about them as like, oh, could they repeat? There's all this downside. They don't have, you know, receiving threats. All of a sudden they have this, what looks like a stacked up wide receiver room, of course, with Kelce, now with Worthy and Hollywood Brown. What are you making out of some of these reports that are coming out of the Chiefs training camp, which is like three-peat, possibly inevitable?
Dude, these Chiefs look good. I'm seeing these training camp clips. Mahomes in, and these receivers are catching, something they have not done in a long time. And they're fast as shit. They're the fastest receiving core probably across the board that they've ever had. And Travis Kelce is coming off a tour. So he's on his Eras tour. Mahomes is on his three-peat tour. And these young receivers are looking to prove and looking to eat and looking to get paid too. So if their defense can even be somewhat near what they were last year, the Chiefs might be inevitable. So
I'm going to bring up a point that's a dumb fan point, and I want you to refute it from a player's perspective. And that is the Chiefs have won two Super Bowls in a row. Travis Kelce is now this big mega celebrity, and football has gone way into the rear view mirror as a priority for any of these guys. And they're resting on their laurels. This idea that they've become complacent and that back-to-back is enough. How can we expect them to win three in a row? I'm assuming that's not how these guys are thinking inside the organization. But from a fan perspective, I think it's very easy to say the easy thing to do is to bet against them for all of those reasons.
Yeah, you know, it's actually pretty crazy right now. The Chiefs' odds to win the Super Bowl are only +575. Like you would think that like any Super Bowl winner would be any like +800, +900, +1,000, like for the first slot, like +575. It's like we might just get a rematch. I don't think though that the 49ers have what it takes to run it back. I think they look like they're running out of some steam. And I think there's going to be some discourse. And I think that these young NFC teams are on the rise and nobody's going to be a cakewalk this year for the 49ers. And that's going to be tough. And yeah, so I think the Chiefs are most likely to do it. Like, again, you have Mahomes and Andy Reid, who at their peak right now offensively are better than anything we saw with Tom Brady and Bill Belichick on offense, besides maybe that Randy Moss year, right? Like, they're just finding a way. And they didn't even have a great offense last year, but they made the critical plays when they needed to, and they won. Now, their offense is going to be really good. So now their offense is a problem this year, and their defense also is a problem. So, I don't know. 1 + 1 = 2, big dog.
I think next week we might have to do a prediction segment where we just walk through who you think is going to come out of each division, who you think is going to come out of each conference, and maybe have you give your way too early Super Bowl prediction, because I think you just sparked something in me there where you are not confident in the 49ers. You are confident in the Chiefs, but we'll bookmark that one for next week.
Yep. I love it.
Get to thinking. The Olympics are happening, Kurt.
Yes.
7-on-7 is coming in 2028. One of my favorite things about the Olympics, the reason we have breakdancing this year in France, is because the host country gets to, without going through all the hoops that normally go into certifying an Olympic sport, you have to have an international governing body, you have to have enough countries on board. The host country gets an automatic qualifier to enter a sport. And what better sport for America to enter when the Olympics comes in 2028 than 7-on-7 flag football? There have already been a lot of players that have said they're interested in joining that 7-on-7 team. I think we could not only dominate with or without NFL talent, but I mean, we could put together the dream team if some of these guys came out and showed out for a 7-on-7 team. If you were the GM of this hypothetical 7-on-7 team for 2028, who are you putting on the offensive and defensive side of the ball?
Okay. Offensive side of the ball, I'm taking... So 7-on-7 is actually typically five receivers, a quarterback, so there's not really seven on offense. But this is who I would have... We'd obviously have a roster, right? We're going to take five receivers, and we're going to have tight ends, running backs. This is how deep I would go. I would have Justin Jefferson, Ja'Marr Chase. I would have Tyreek Hill. Give me CeeDee Lamb, and give me AJ Brown. So those would be my five receivers. Then I'm going to be a couple running backs deep, right? I'm going to go really young on these running backs as well. Guys that can catch passes out of the backfield. I want Bijan Robinson and I want Gibbs. Give me Gibbs and Bijan as my two young buck running backs out of the backfield. And now at tight end, and again, this is a passing league. We need guys with good verts. People are going to hate me for this. Give me Travis Kelce for the publicity, and then throw in Laporta and Njoku as our monsters in the red zone. And then at quarterback, give me Mahomes with our reserve as Kyler Murray. I think Kyler Murray would be untouchable in flag football. Like if you blitz him, you won't touch him most likely. So give me him. Now, defensive side of the ball, we're going to go four DBs. We're going to start with Sauce Gardner outside. We're going to go Patrick Surtain on the other side. We're going to go Jair Alexander in the slot. And then we're going to go Jalen Ramsey in the slot with his length. We're going to start with Kyle Hamilton, absolute gadget monster. Covers a lot of ground. We're going to add Minkah Fitzpatrick in there because he's a ball hawk. And then give me a sneaky third just in case, Jesse Bates. Absolute baller for the Falcons. Love how he plays. I know people love Antoine Winfield. I do too, but I like my group. I really like my group. And now linebackers. We're going to be playing with only one linebacker on the field because we don't really need much more than that. We're going to just have a lot of DBs. Give me Fred Warner because he's an absolute monster.
Who's going to head coach your squad, Kurt?
Ooh. Who's going to head coach? Give me Mike McDaniel. Give me Mike McDaniel to just absolutely draw up some shit in the dirt and get the guys ready to play some ball and look good as hell doing it on a worldwide stage.
I think there's some momentum here. I don't know if we're going to be able to go 14 for 14 with all the guys that you listed, but I feel like come 2028, there's going to be a couple of those guys who still want to play a little bit, want to win a gold medal. I mean, to be able to think about Travis Kelce, to be a Super Bowl winner, but then also to be a gold medal winner in football.
Never been done.
Never been done before. Might never be done again. Yep. I mean, the idea that flag football could only be in the Olympics for this year because it might not get the momentum
and
internationally.
And the U.S. is going to win. You know what I mean? Like, U.S. Right. is going to win. So it's like, go get your free gold medal. Go get it.
Go get your free gold medal. All right, final thing, Kurt. I want to talk a little bit of fantasy. First, I want to know, fantasy draft season is coming up. When is your preferred window to have a fantasy draft?
Oh, right after preseason. Like, after rosters are set, after all the craziness. Like, I need to know. I need to know all the contingencies and stipulations before I draft.
Yeah, that's fair. I think a lot of people do it. I realize this as I get older, that there's schedules you got to work around. You have friends in high school. Like, you're old now. And so you got to, maybe the first week of August is the best time to do it. But, man,
which
a guy
is unfortunate.
Pops an ACL. Yep. And I haven't done that. And I'm not going to do that. But I have seen people that have done that. And it's the last thing you want to do is have a guy tear something after you've just drafted him first round. We're going to do a fantasy this or that. I'm going to give you two players. From a fantasy perspective, I need you to pick which guy you'd rather have on your team. All right?
Ooh, okay.
Nico Collins or Marvin Harrison Jr.?
Oh, give me Marvin Harrison Jr. because we're thinking keeper here. But Nico Collins, I like his per reception value more so than anything, but he's got more balls that are going to be spread around. Pause. So Marvin Harrison should get his targets.
Saquon or Jonathan Taylor?
Jonathan Taylor. Jonathan Taylor is going to run the shit out of the ball this year. Saquon's going to get some out of the backfield, but again, I'm talking about distribution. Who can you count on? Saquon's got a lot of other guys on the field that are going to get fed to.
Jalen Hurts or Dak Prescott?
Give me Jalen Hurts. Those tush pushes really add up. And I'm expecting a slight regression from the Cowboys this year.
Trey McBride or Evan Engram?
Evan Engram. Evan Engram had like 40 targets in the last 4 weeks of the season last year, and he was eating like a receiver. And I think he's one of the few tight ends that give you receiver value targets wise at the tight end position. I mean, Trey McBride also got fed too, but give me Evan Engram.
Deebo Samuel or DJ Moore?
Give me DJ Moore this year. I like Deebo. I think he's going to get his touches. But I think that DJ Moore is not going to be able to get double covered anymore. He has had to deal with double coverage and safety help all of his career, and they're not going to be able to do that this year. And I know, I absolutely know that Keenan Allen's going to get his, but I think DJ Moore is going to have more bang for his buck this year. Deebo also, like, Ayuk's gone, so like those targets got to go somewhere, but I don't know if how Deebo plays is sustainable to not miss some games. So give me DJ Moore this year. I'm going to go with my gut.
When do you draw the line of this guy's good because it doesn't have to be double covered, or this guy's not good because there's too many mouths to feed on the offense? Like, that seems like the same different sides of the same coin.
Yeah, no, I would say it is different sides of the same coin, but I'm thinking of, like, DJ Moore, his big playability from not being double covered, like, he can take a slant 60 yards and it's over, right? Nico Collins is, he can still get loose, but he's more of a possession guy. And I just think DJ Moore also just got super, super paid, and they're going to want to give him his ops outside. Like, we've never seen DJ Moore really with anybody else in the supporting cast, where I think Nico Collins, like, I think his ceiling fantasy-wise was last year. Because now you add Joe Mixon to the mix, you add Stephon Diggs to the mix, Tank Dell's back. Like, what we saw out of Nico Collins in the playoffs was because we had to see that out of Nico Collins. I still think he's a great pick. I have him on my fantasy team. He's my keeper from last year, round 13 grab, I believe. But yeah, I just think, how are these teams going to have to play ball to win games? Christian McCaffrey's still going to get his red zone touchdowns. And like I just don't like how much you don't know what to expect with Shanahan's offense to ever start somebody like Deebo. But he could pop off for 30 points in one game, and it's great. But I think DJ Moore at least get his 4, 5, 6 targets, right? Like, some days he'll have 8, 9, and he'll have probably 5 to 10 touchdowns this year.
Gets me so excited to talk about target share, game scripts. You're just like, you know, what do these guys need to do to win? I mean, it's here. It's here.
It's here, baby. I've waited so long. You waited so long. We're back.
Yeah.
We're damn near back. And I will be looking at these preseason games tonight, checking the live scores, checking the live odds. You know what I mean? I'll be there. I got to get a taste. I got to get my first taste.
How do you bet on preseason? Like, isn't there some aspect where, like, it's not perfect. Like, you're not assuming that every team is trying their hardest. So how do you bake that in? Chaos of what you love?
You watch the game with your eyes instead of what you're seeing on the stats. Who's playing harder? Who's scheming things up? Which quarterbacks are playing which? A lot of times the vet quarterbacks that have been playing for a while play better in preseason because they're not missing the freebies, where the young rookie quarterbacks will miss freebies, weird things will happen, whatever. So my eyes are definitely peeled to the game flow, which I don't think Vegas can track the game flow the same way my eyeballs can.
All right, well, go follow Kurt on Twitter. I'm sure you'll be keeping people up to date on your opinion of the game flow. Yeah, we'll be back next week. We'll be talking real football next week. Pretty much real football next week. I'm looking forward to it.
I can't wait. Let's get it. See you guys next time.